Hey everyone, I am Dahlia.
And I'm Alma. This is Nightmare on Fifth Street, a horror movie podcast.
Alma was singing the cutest little song before we started. Alma, you want to sing it for everybody?
What was he singing? You know going, I don't know what I'm doing. Oh, it's the bunny hop.
Yeah.
It's the bunny hop. It's been in my head because I wasn't listening to music. I've been listening to podcasts all morning. So you know how I do that thing. I just constantly making noise. And sometimes I don't notice that I'm doing it. Well, a lot of time I don't notice.
But I used to love doing the bunny hop. I don't know why. It is kind of nothingness going on during it, but I used to like literally love doing the bunny hop, the little kick out, the little kick out, and then the hop in the back and the hop or whatever. Yeah,
it's funny because I don't know a lot of dances, but usually the ones that people know are like the electric slide, the bunny hop, the Macarena. Everybody knows that one. The oh hand jive.
Oh, the hand jive. Yeah.
The Dougie.
Oh, my God. Okay. I've never been one that can do those line dances or the dances that everybody knows. I don't know them. Except for the bunny hop.
It's fun to do.
That's it. It's the only one I know. Because we did it as kids. That's why. That's the only reason. Other than that, like literally as like a part of our schooling. For some reason.
We did square dancing. Don't you remember?
Yes, we did square dancing, but it wasn't to any, it wasn't like a, it was just, I don't know, the music went on and they told you what to do. It's not like you had to know what to do. They told you what to do.
I know, so, but it was fun and it was like a thing, you know, like do-si-do,
turn your partner.
No, but I mean, it's like, it's a thing everybody knows because you have to know how to do-si-do. You have to know how to do-si-do if you're going to do.
I think I forgot what
it is. It's when you do this with the arms linked. You spin around a circle.
See, okay, now I remember how to do-si-do. Okay, well, we are not talking about any kind of line dancing today that I can remember. I don't think there was any line dancing in this, was there?
No, there was no dancing.
Okay, yeah, there was no. Was there no dancing either?
No, there's no dancing.
Okay, there was no dancing whatsoever in this movie. And this movie is Blood and Donuts from 1995. And this movie is... here's the little short bio on it. Stuck in an all-night donut shop, a vampire hunts a rat, saves a cab driver from thugs, and deals with an ex-girlfriend. That's literally what's going on in this movie.
That's the whole movie right there. Those are each scene by scene, and then we just haven't given the conclusion yet. So there you go.
Okay, so remember, we're doing Women of Horror this month. And this movie is directed by Holly Dale. And we'll get more into her bio in a little bit. But Alma, right now, can you tell us who wrote this movie? Who's in it? The director again? All that good stuff.
All right. This, first of all, Blood and Donuts is a really cool movie title. I just want to get that out of it. That was a really cool movie title. We found this on the Roku channel, so you can stream it for free. It was written by Andrew Rye Berzins and directed by Holly Dale. Dali will talk more about her, but this was her directorial debut, because before this, it was Solid Light documentaries for her. Gordon Curry is our lead actor as Boya, the vampire. Louis Ferreira as Earl, the cab driver, Helen Clarkson as Molly, Fiona Reed as Rita, David Cronenberg as crime boss. I love to mention these random roles that people will do. It's totally random. It's so strange. Anyway, Frank Moore as Pierce, Hadley Kay as Axel. Okay, and that's the whole entire cast. I don't think there's anybody else.
No,
in the movie, except for in the background.
That is the actual David Cronenberg. It's not, because when I first saw the name pop up on, like, you know how the credits in the beginning of the movie, I was like, oh, look, someone named David Cronenberg. That's going to be so cool, because this person probably, you know, thinks it's really cool that he has this famous name. No, it is the David Cronenberg in this movie playing a crime boss.
I he doesn't even have a name. It. He doesn't have a he name. Doesn't. He's just he randomly the crime boss. And it's this like supposed to be, I think it's listed as like a horror comedy. And I described it as a dark comedy with one person who is taking the movie too seriously and doing too much. And that is that actor, Louis Ferreira, right?
As oh my God.
The cab driver. We're going to get this out so of the great. Way.
We're going to get out of the way because this movie is set, not only is it set in Canada, apparently Toronto, but also everybody associated with this movie is Canadian.
They're Canadians.
Everybody, it's filmed in Canada. It's supposed to be set in Canada. Everybody's Canadian. But what's up with the cabbie?
Yeah, okay. My first impression of the movie, I had to look him up. He is doing an accent. And when I was doing some reading, it said that he was supposed to be doing like an Italian New Yorker cabbie driver accent. But in the back of my head, it was killing me because I'm like, who does he sound like he's doing an impression of? And then Dahlia thought of it because I watched it again with her when she was visiting me. And Christopher Walken, he sounds like he's doing a Christopher Walken impression.
He sounds like him. He does.
Yes.
And everything he was saying, I felt like repeating back in that Christopher Walken. And of course, I had to do my shoulders and put my whole body into it as I'm talking.
Because
that's who he sounds like he's trying to sound like. And the funny thing is, I don't know if this was one of his first roles or what, this actor, Luis Ferreira, because he's an actor. He's done a lot of shit and he's a good actor.
You've seen him in stuff.
Yeah. When you look him up, you're like, oh yeah, I've seen him in that. I've seen him in that. I know who he is. Even if you don't right away recognize him, you'll recognize his face. Like if you don't recognize his body of work or his name, you know who he is. But for some reason, this must have been one of his first roles and he just went for it. He just fucking went for it. And for me, it made the movie that much more interesting because every time he talked, I would like really pay attention to what he's saying. Like, what's going on here?
He's doing too much. He's doing too much for me. I don't know what the motivation was. I don't know if the director said, let's do this, but it did add to the, you need to know that this is like very dark, like comedy, like it's not supposed to be taken so seriously. And it's almost, it's a fun movie and his character is just so bizarre. It's the star of the movie somehow, listening to everything he says, I'm kind of hanging on it. And I had read recently somewhere that Christopher Walken, the way he speaks and his speech pattern, it has a lot to do with the fact that when he was growing up, he was speaking English with people whose English was a second language, and therefore they would take pauses before they think of the word that they needed to use. So that is in his speech pattern. And it's just that this character is doing that. He pauses, he does it, but it's strange because it's in Canada. Why is he supposed to be doing kind of almost like a New Yorker Christopher Walken accent? I have no clue. Anyway, go on.
Okay, so those are Alma's first thoughts. And my first thoughts when watching this, this movie was made in 95, but it's very obviously a lower budget movie. That doesn't take away from this at all. It's just that you can tell from the camera and the camera work, some of the maybe the short list of characters or actors in this, things like that. So this isn't straight up horror. It's a horror comedy, dark comedy, whatever, however you want to look at it. But it's billed as horror comedy. And as Alma said already, that this was the director's, Holly Dale's first narrative film. As Alma said, she made her reputation in documentary films before she did this. In the French speaking parts of Canada, the film is called Heart of the Vampire. So, but yeah, that was my first thoughts. That it's, even though it's a 95, I've watched movies in 95 that had like better camera work and all that. But I still liked it. It was fun. It was endearing. It's an endearing movie. And we'll get into why and all that. But I don't know. I liked it. You know, it's not, I don't think it's a movie we would have ever come across before if we weren't doing Women of Horror. Because when we did our research for what movies we'd cover for this season. This is, I mean, we had to do a deep dive into trying to find movies. See, that's what sucks about it. That's why we had to do a whole season of Women of Horror, because we had to do deep dives into like women directors in horror and stuff like that. It's like, why do we have to do that? But we did. And this was on a couple of lists of like movies you've never heard of. And Blood and Donuts. I like the title too. Unfortunately,
I like that you described it as endearing. Sorry, I was just saying the way you said endearing was one of the words I would have used to describe some of this movie. And sorry for interrupting you, because I really
That's fine. Now, I was also just going to say something stupid, that Blood and Donuts makes me think of a jelly-filled donut. And I thought I was going to see some donuts that were filled with blood. I really did. We didn't see any of that, though.
I thought it might have been an original of this movie that I saw in the past year with the Killer Donuts. Is it called Killer Donuts? And so I thought this was a prequel or the original to that. And I remember the donuts in there were killing people and they were like CGI jumping around with teeth and stuff. And that was another movie that I just threw on. But this one, I'm glad you found it. And it's not that there are not a lot of great women directors to highlight. It's that there's obviously not as many. We want to make sure that we find them all so everybody is aware of them and can list them and see them and see where their first works were from, because Dalia found a lot of great work from the director. And so it's like, this is where she started.
Yeah. And I just did want to mention real quick that the movie was written by Andrew Ray Berzins. It was one of three films being produced by the newly founded, this was in 95, by the newly founded Feature Film Project, an initiative of the Canadian Film Center. And then you can see all of that stuff in the credits, like all the thanks. It's a lot of Canadian, I don't know, I wouldn't say businesses or organizations and all that. And it was shot in an actual donut shop, because the thanks too is there's a donut shop listed in it. So all those donuts, I guess, we're looking at are real. I don't know.
I thought it was gross. You said obviously they made the place look like it was like older and blah, blah, blah. But if you look at it, I was like, I would never go in there and eat a donut. It was the floor and the walls and everything. It was, you know, it was dingy. And
I think they did make it. I think they dinged it up for the movie, because it's kind of supposed to be, I think, in a not great part of town, because of you see the people coming in and out. Even the vampire alone, they didn't really give him a second thought when he came in and he looked the way he did. And then the thugs that keep coming in and out, the cabbie, everybody's just kind of like, they're not, what's the phrase, on the straight and narrow.
That's funny, because this is where also it's comedic, because nobody in this movie is bad, like good bad. They're not the greatest, but even the punk gangster guys, this gang, they're not killing anyone. They're not like, you know what I mean? They're not like shooting up places. They're not murderers or anything like that. They're just stupid tough guys. And they do crimes. I kept saying, they're just criming. You know what I mean? And that's how they have the bumbling cab driver. They make him do crimes with them. They're forcing him to. They're like, you're going to be our driver for this. You're going to do this kind of stuff. And it's funny, because the guy just does it. He just does whatever these guys tell him to do. But they're not like strong-arming him into doing it initially, you know?
Initially.
But yeah, none of them. Even Boya. Boya is listed as, and I like it when people write this in when they're doing reviews, as a vegetarian vampire, because he's trying not to drink human blood. So even then, you see that this is something he drinks the blood of like the rats and the birds. And so he's trying to be a good vampire. Okay. And he's actually quite good at like looking like a vampire, like, you know, the typical kind of depressed looking and, oh, life has to go on and I'm stuck here kind of thing. And that's where the movie starts off. He has been asleep for 25 years And he went into this hibernation sleep that vampires do because of
when did he go into the hibernation sleep? Because yes. It starts off in 1969.
And that is how I always remember when the first man stepped on the moon, because it's my birthday. July 20th is, but in 69, I was not born in 69, but the first man stepped on the moon and he saw this and it made him very sad. Because he has always romanticized the moon and love, and seeing that made him so depressed that he decided to bury himself up and go into a deep sleep. That was where he went to bed. He is awakened by a golf ball that someone hits and then knocks into the place where he's decided to slumber.
Very randomly too. It's not like it's like right. Yeah, it's so random. So as Alma said, he wakes up from his, from being dormant since the moon landing. And he comes out, he's so dusty. He's so dirty and dusty. It's just like, you can inhale. It's like, I'm inhaling the dustiness of this man. And he gets picked up by a cabbie, and, that's the cabbie we were talking about, Mr. Christopher Walken. And he gets picked up and he tells him, take me to this cemetery. He goes to the cemetery and he digs up his belongings. And all of this, there's a reason I'm mentioning all these like little things, because during all this, we also see a woman. She is a little older than our vampire, but she is like, I think she's doing hair. Maybe she's doing someone's hair. She's getting her hair done. I can't remember exactly what. I don't know why I'm picturing her getting her hair done or doing someone's hair. But she all of a sudden just kind of looks off and she like touches her throat. And then we kind of start thinking, oh, this must have been a love interest or something of his. Because I don't know. She got a feeling that this dude was awake. And so so eventually she comes into play later in the movie where she started off as this long lost love, but she kind of turns out to be kind of a bitch. I don't know. That's
she's
how
evil.
I would describe
her. As evil as this movie is going to get, because she, the vampire Boya, I think he had his special power. Sometimes our vampires have special powers, is that he can have like a psychic link with people. She has an old scar on her neck. So obviously he has drunk blood from her at some point. I never know which one to say, drunk. Anyway, so she has that feeling and she's like, she senses that he's awake again. Now, this is the part where I'm like, I don't care how nice Boya is in this movie. He ditched this woman. This was his woman. And he just completely abandoned her, left her. And 25 years later, he is back and he doesn't even go looking for her. He has a picture of her in an album that he's going through. And he's just like fondly remembering, like,
he's reminiscing over her. Yeah.
He could easily find her, apologize for leaving her just out there alone and everything. And he goes to the donut shop right after. And he instantly has a new connection with the donut shop worker that works there, Molly. And you could tell like, this is going to be his new love interest or whatever. So he just, he gets a new love every 25 years. He goes to sleep for a bit until that lady is gone out of his mind.
He explains later, because we find out more about this, the other woman, the first love that we are aware of. We find out more about, I think, why he didn't go seek her out. But before he goes to the donut shop, actually, there's these two guys, these two thugs. We call them thugs throughout there because it's hilarious. They're not really thugs. They're just kind of, they seem kind of like these wannabe crime guys. They come into the cafe. I call it a cafe, but it's a donut shop. They come into the donut shop and they're looking for, we find out his name is Earl, that cabbie, the one who talks like Christopher Walken. His name is Earl. They come in and they're looking for him. But I love Molly. This is when we get introduced to Molly. She is kind of a badass from the beginning, because she kind of just gently kind of mocks them a little bit, but not like outright, like, you know. And then is this the part where she pulls out a bat? I can't remember exactly. I think this might be the part where she pulls out a bat.
She does.
Like, I like her, because she's just basically telling these guys, like in a very low-key way, you guys are losers. Y'all need to get out of here. Earl is none of your business. Now skedaddle. And she shows mm-hmm. them her bat. And then they're like, oh, okay. And then they leave. As Alma said, this is when old dude vampire, I love his name, Boya. He comes in, and then is this a new love interest for him? Did he ditch the blonde lady from the 60s? Did he ditch her? And now he has this new chick in the 90s. Who knows? But yeah, he was reminiscing over the other lady. It's just like, but he doesn't look her up. Well, and he looks her up in the phone book only to see that she's still alive. That was pretty much
it. Yeah, like, she's still alive. I'll stay away from her. She lives right here. Regardless, another interesting point is she's supposed to be older. We're saying she's older, but to me, she does not look older. She still looks very young. So this isn't like a very old lady. No.
I just say older. So yes, compared to him, because he doesn't age.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think she looks younger than him. I think.
You think so?
I was on her side for a little bit. I was on her side. You know, I do that when I get like the scorned lover.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Earl, the cab driver, he is in trouble from the beginning because he the night that he took Boya to the graveyard to pick up his stuff, he was in the middle of criming with the two dudes. He uses this as an excuse to get
away. I like how
you
use that as a verb, criming.
Yes, he's criming with them. He's supposed to be their getaway driver. And he ditched them. They left the car. Someone hops in the car. It was either Boya or the other woman. But regardless, he ditched them, and it was kind of brave of him to do that. But this is how you see the comedy in the movie, because they're not so scary that he didn't think two shits about taking off on them. And also that the woman donut shop worker isn't afraid of them whatsoever. This is their territory, and she isn't scared of them. She's handling business on her own. She's not worried about these two guys coming back to rough her up or anything. This is their neighborhood that they, when they're talking to the crime boss, David Cronenberg, they're just casually talking about this being their area and keeping it in check, but nobody's afraid of them. They're still doing whatever they want to do. And it's just kind of funny. Their characters, even the two guys, they're just, one of them is kind of dumb and sillier. And the other one is kind of like, you know, smooth talking, kind of like slow walking everywhere. Like he's cool or something, but they have an air about them that is comedic.
Well, I did want to mention real quick, too, that when Boya, the vampire, our vampire dude, I'm just going to call him vampire dude because that's what my notes say. when vampire dude, there's this part when he's reminiscing over Rita, which is the lady from the 60s. He's, like Alma said, looking at a photo of her, and he has a photo album. Do you remember the part where he used his own blood as glue to like glue her picture to the photo album?
Does that work?
I guess you want to find out? I don't. Because that was a lot of blood that he used. It was a good deep cut. Of course, I guess he heals quickly. I don't know. Oh, yeah, he does. He heals quickly. We find out that in a little bit. But yeah, he cut himself pretty good. And a whole bunch of blood came out. And he just slid it on the back of that photo. And then, boop, it's
with
glue.
His gross nails. And the budget pretty much was for his nails in this movie, his wig. And and maybe dusting up the old donut shop. But later they do use some effect when they show his vampire scary face, which was really good. He did have a very
That scary face was actually pretty good. They did a good job on that. It didn't look too plasticky, because like even in higher budget movies, they tend to overdo that. They tend to make it look weird, but not in this one. I think they did a really good tasteful job of it. So we eventually see that the two thugs catch up with our cabbie, and now they're going to go crime, all three of them together again, because he ran out on them earlier. So they got to finish up business here. Meanwhile, our vampire, he gets a room in this kind of seedy hotel apartment. And he's just like watching everybody. And this is before we realize that he's not going to eat people. But, you know, spoiler alert, we already said that in the beginning. but he's eyeing people. We're like, oh, is he going to grab that older man there that can barely walk? Who's going to? So he's looking at different people, and then he closes the door. And then we hear a scratching, and then he throws his hand through the wall and he grabs a rat. And the reason I'm mentioning the putting his hand through the wall, because at first I thought he was throwing his hand through the wall because the older gentleman that could barely walk was on the other side of the wall. And so that's why I thought he was going to grab that older gentleman. But no, he went through the wall to grab a rat. And then why are supposed vegetarian vampires always eating rats? It's like, I don't know why. It just totally grosses me out.
You caught that because I didn't notice the old man went into the room next to his. And then when he did that, they even made the rat scream. Like it screamed when he grabbed it to eat it or suck its blood or whatever. But also every time that Boya drinks blood, it is in a very unconventional manner. Okay. First of all, it looks like he's just whole ass eating rats and pigeons. But later, he uses his finger to scratch this guy's face and he licks the blood off. And it's just like, why doesn't he just do the regular, like just bite the neck and suck the blood out? It's just to make it grosser with the gross nails that he's wearing.
I think it's a little bit of everything because it's different. I like movies that change up the lore a little bit. And then like we find out later that a stake through the heart does not work. He's not trying to bleed someone dry. The people, at least when he's doing it, when he cuts the guy on the face later or stuff like that, he's not trying to bleed them dry. He's just trying to scare or just get a little bit of blood so that he can heal. So I think that's another reason. But you're right. He does it differently. Even when we see in movies, they go for the wrist, they go for the throat. When they're not going to kill them, they still go for those places. But he does it. He just goes wherever the fuck he can get blood.
Okay, so if we're getting this right, if you've watched the movie, if you're not going to watch the movie, the big thing about Boya in this movie is that he has sentimental attachments to people. He meets Earl right away, the cab driver. He feels sorry for him. He is Earl gets afraid because the two bad guys, they come in, they rough him up, they beat him up. Okay. They squirt him with lemon juice. This is the thing that they decide to do to torture this man.
After beating the shit out of him, they squirt him with lemon juice. That's so cruel.
And it's a strange thing to have in your pocket. That's the funny part. The guy pulls out a lemon squeezer. You know, the cheap little plastic yellow things with the green top that you get at the grocery store, full of lemon juice, and they squirt it on him. But they're really beating the shit out of him. And Boya comes to their rescue, and he scratches one of the guy's faces and sucks the blood off just for a second, like restraining himself, scares the guys off to go away. But here is the best part about Boya is that he likes this guy. He likes the donut shop worker. I think that him reminiscing in the photo album is showing that he went to sleep because everything is just kind of too much. He meets new people and he keeps living and living. Everybody gets older. He gets worried and concerned about these people. He quickly makes an attachment to this cab driver and wants to save him. He invites him to stay with him in his hotel room. Interesting, and when I was reading about the movie, it said in French-speaking parts of Canada, the film is called Heart of the Vampire, which honestly seems to be a more appropriate name of the movie because it's pretty much about Boya and his love of pretty much like humanity. Look, he was a romantic guy. The moon got messed up because somebody stepped on it. The donut shop worker, she's beautiful to him. She's assertive. She's strong. And right away, he's like, this is somebody who is good heart and becomes attached to her. Even though Earl is doing dumb shit, he's like, this is a good guy, and he's trying to save everybody. And I think that all is just a little too much for this, who knows, hundreds-year-old vampire.
Okay, can we go back now? We're going to go back to the two thugs, because remember how they were going around criming and Earl was driving them around? Well, This is when we meet David Cronenberg as a crime boss. And this little thing I'm about to read is from Real Canadians, R-E-E-L, Interviews from the Canadian Film World by Angela Baldessar. And it's kind of interesting to, I'm going to read directly from it because this is her commenting on Holly Dale and David Cronenberg. Okay. Director Holly Dale has the most enigmatic expression on her face as she watches David Cronenberg deliver his bad guy lines on the set of Blood and Donuts. Whether it's appreciation for the horror movie director's acting abilities or amusement for the scene's outcome, Cronenberg's character is killed by a vampire. It's anybody's guess. For some of us gathered in the basement of an old Pape Avenue church, however, watching the man responsible for terrifying us with his films finally getting his comeuppance, the scene is sweet vindication. I know we're not there yet, but I just wanted to read that part because this is when we get introduced to David Cronenberg. And yeah, he does end up getting killed by a vampire, but he gets killed by a vampire kind of sweetly too. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. But this is when we first get introduced to David Cronenberg, kind of just sitting there being the cool cat. You know, it's he's not overacting, he's not underacting, he's just sitting there, kind of how you would expect him to be. I don't know, as a crime boss. It's just funny. He just pops up on screen. There he is.
I didn't get it. I was like, what are you doing? What are you doing this week? And then when you don't even have a name. You don't have a name. And then he's doing the whole talking to them casually, but he pulls off that casual, you know, kind of air about himself, just like kind of chilling. And it's remarkable to see him do it.
he even does this weird thing where David Cronenberg asks the two thugs, do you know why they have to wear, oh, because this is happening in a bowling alley. He's like, do you know why you have to wear these special shoes out there when you're bowling? And somebody says something. And he's like, no, it's because it scuffs up the floor. So he tells one guy to take off his shoe and he starts moving it around on the table and it shows that it scuffs up. And then he gets another shoe and shows the scuffing. And then he uses a bowling shoe and it doesn't scuff up. And it's just like, this is so fucking random. It's like, what's going on here? We're learning about the shoes. I always but to be true, I did learn something because I thought it was the shoes were important because you don't slip in them. That's what I thought. That's what I always thought. But anyways,
I don't know. I busted my ass quite a bit in a bowling alley, and I don't think it makes a difference what shoes.
Did you
I'm
really?
Wearing. I always have, but see, you mentioned it this weekend. I tripped on nothing and I'm always slipping. I was going to write a review on the shoes I took on vacation because I was like, I slipped all over the place and these are supposed to be hiking shoes. And then Dale was like,
have you written a review yet? You really should write a review because those are supposed to be hiking shoes. And the whole point of hiking shoes is, well, not the whole point, but one of the points of hiking shoes is you're not supposed to slip easily. They're supposed to
I busted my ass so many times. You did. And so one time I fell so hard. It was funny that Thalia mentioned it was a good thing we had two doctors and two RNs, my sister and another RN and two doctors. And instead of laughing, because I would have laughed if I saw myself fall that hard, everyone was concerned. So that's how you know how grown up these people are that I was up against.
Yeah, we were all concerned. And then after that, it was kind of funny because then one of the doctors was constantly checking up on Alma to make sure she was okay. And
yes, was because of how hard I felt. And I'm like, quit asking me. I'm embarrassed. Leave me alone.
He's like, just make sure you take some ibuprofen or acetaminophen later so that... It's so funny. And
so this random character in here and the bad guys, they're not so bad. And that's why Dalia mentioned that he is even killed kind of sweetly. Every action in this, I think in this movie, wasn't just like, it wasn't supposed to be very scary. It's not supposed to be gory or anything like that. That's why I talked about it in like, it's like a dark comedy. And it is very, like, kind of slow moving, the movie. The pacing is great. I don't know how long the runtime is in it, but the one
I think
thing
like 86 I just, minutes. It's pretty short.
It's pretty short. Wow. Yeah. So see, you can sit through it and watch it and find some interesting things. I just really think I wanted a little more from the vampire story because I think a lot of it is what we're obviously like, what we feel about the character, but what little they give us when he's looking, reminiscing, talking in his action does give us a lot, but I just kind of like it left me kind of more with a sad feeling than a happy feeling or laughing. You know, I just thought of it like sometimes when you watch something, it just leaves you like, that was just kind of sad. I don't want to be watching something just to have like a sad. It doesn't matter how comical the performance was from the cab driver, because he was a little too bumbly. It was just, it's over the top. Not even, it wasn't even over the top. It's just in contrast to the other characters, you know, he's really like noticeable, but it, the movie just left me kind of with just like a sad, like pointless feeling.
It is kind of depressing. There's this one part where Earl is in the donut shop and he's telling Molly his life woes. And Molly tells him that she just wants to make good donuts and give people a safe place to eat them. And I wrote that down because it was like I said, when mentioned earlier, that I think this is supposed to be kind of in a rundown neighborhood because you see the people coming in and out. And that part where she said she wants to make good donuts and just wants to give people a safe place to eat them. That was kind of like, oh, that's so sweet. And
And that's why I feel like if they gave us more scary vampire, then I wouldn't have been pulling so much feeling out of something that was supposed to be comedic. You know, I'm like, that's not what I'm going for. So definitely we'll say at the ending what our final thoughts are. But that's what I found most frustrated about it. I don't think I would have chosen to watch something that made me sit there and think like that. It's like you're going to give me this gap of space while this dude is sitting there reminiscing in an old photo album where you can see decades worth of photos where he is with different people. And the only thing I'm going to do is just get kind of a sad feeling because he's looking at these photos. They're all dead people. And
he's falling for Molly. And he's falling for Molly. And Molly's falling for him. And that's the part that's going to suck because, yeah, he may be falling for her. But if she falls for him, then is this going to be another long lost love in the future? So she's falling for him. There's this weird, I don't know if I even want to mention it, this weird not sex scene between Molly and the vampire.
Mention it, please, because that is something that's funny. That was something funny to me that at least it kept me from, why am I watching this depressing vampire guy part? Because they have like this psychic connection and they're doing it. I attribute it kind of like to the scene from Demolition Man, the movie with Sandra Bullock, and she does it with Sylvester Stallone with the virtually, because they don't have sex anymore. So they're doing it through a psychic link with each other, the donut shop worker and him, and they're thrashing about and making moans and everything. And I appreciated that.
And they're not in they're not even in the same building. She's like in her own bed, like sleeping, it looked like, and he's in a completely different building on the other side of town in the bathtub. And you don't see any bits at all. She's nothing, fully clothed. Nothing. He's covered by water. So you don't see anything. You just know what's going on.
Opaque water. They made the water so opaque that you can't see through it with soap or something. And I appreciate that part because it was action-y and it didn't depress me. So thank you for that.
We see the thugs go back to David Cronenberg again because, you know, they're like all pissed off from earlier. Because remember, they were confronted by a vampire who saved Earl. And they're like, oh, you know, there's this dude. So David Cronenberg's like, y'all got to take care of your shit. But he didn't say it like that. Former gal pal goes and confronts Molly, like just talking about, like, I don't know, she's just starting to talk shit and shit like that. She finally meets up with our vampire. See, I already forgot her fucking name. Rita. She finally comes up and she confronts him and she's saying like, what the fuck? She's not saying those words, but she's like, what the fuck? You left me. I feel rejected. I feel abandoned. Why'd you leave me? How dare you? You didn't even say anything. You just disappeared. I'm supposed to be okay with that. And then she tries to stake him. Actually, she didn't try to. She did fucking stake him.
She did it.
She staked him. The stake went straight through his body. And he fucking just pulls it out and say, like, that's not a thing.
<He's> just like, don't believe everything you see in the movies.
And then he just nopes out of there. He's just out of there. And then Earl comes back to the apartment and he finds the bloody shirt. He finds the photo album we keep talking about. Clues galore. And then he's like, oh my God, is he, you know, what's going on? And then he walks into the bathroom and he finds our vampire, our resident vampire, in the tub eating pigeons. He's fucking eating pigeons.
He's taking care of the pigeon problem. He should have said thank you. You're making our home safer. We're not going to get bird flu and stuff like that. Because and he has the hole, which he's healing from. So what does kill the vampire? We know that he is susceptible to the sunlight because a few times he hides from it and kind of burns him. But a stake through the heart isn't going to kill him. It didn't do anything.
Nope,
did he
get
shot at some point?
I'm trying to remember. He does get injured a few times to where we're seeing that he can heal from those things. Like it's those aren't things that are going to kill him. Molly herself is starting to do research on vampires. Well, not vampires at first. She senses something's up with our vampire dude. And so she's doing lots of different kinds of research on like otherworldly things. She eventually finds out that he's a vampire, but I made a joke on my notes. It's because fucking former gal pal keeps coming around and she keeps nagging at him. And again, I get that she is feels rejected and all that, but he tells her the reason why. She wanted to turn into a vampire and he was telling her, no, you don't want this. And she's like, yes, I do. I want to be a vampire. I want to be with you forever. And I guess this is a theme with them, that he kept telling her that he was never going to turn her into a vampire, but she really wants it. So that's when I started feeling, I didn't feel bad for her anymore, because she's insisting and insisting. And then when she staked them, it's like, so she was just willing to kill him after that. And then when that didn't work, she still came around and she kept fucking nagging him, like, make me a vampire, make me a vampire. He's just like, no, get away from me, lady.
Yes. And so this leads us to her staking him to try to kill him. And then she goes to Molly and tells her, you know, you're young, you're not going to be young forever. And then there's a trigger warning for this movie, definitely, because it for suicide, and there's some insensitive language that, you know, it's outdated. We don't talk like that anymore. But she comes to the point where she's like, pretty much she was going to kill him. If I can't have you, you know, nobody can have you. But then when she realizes she couldn't kill him that way, she brings a gun to him and she ends up trying to shoot herself. But he saves her.
He saves her, yes.
Because at the end of the day, he is constantly just like trying to save people because he knows we die and he doesn't want anybody to die, you know, and except for when we get to the end of the movie, when he has to save Earl.
Yeah. And it's really sad, because that was sad where she saw like that was her only choice was to end her own life. But he did save her and she didn't try again. So that's good. Vampire dude braves the sunlight to get away from all this mess, and he runs over to Molly. She said this is daytime, obviously, because I said he braves the sunlight. He goes to Molly at the donut shop, and there, that's when she had come to the full realization he's a vampire. She cuts herself and she lets him drink from her so he can heal, because he's all badly burned up from being out in the sun, and he's drinking her blood. But there was kind of a point where it didn't look like he was going to stop, and he just kept drinking and drinking, and she reacted to that. And then finally he stopped himself. He's like, I didn't think I was going to be able to stop. But then he starts to heal. And then we have, he flies. I don't even know why I wrote this down. It was so weird. He gets a connection, or he has some kind of psychic connection to Earl as well. He has psychic connections, I guess, to people that he cares about. So Earl right now is with the thugs. The thugs have Earl, and he flies over there and he fucking confronts everybody that's there. And that's when the two thugs were like, oh, that's him. And Cronenberg's like, I'll take care of this shit. And I love this part, because he dies, but he dies kind of, I don't know. He dies kind of silly, because
it is silly, because he sucks his blood out of his face through his face. Like, what the hell is that? Like, this is how we decide to kill somebody. It just sucking face like it was just so funny. It was funny looking, and but you could tell like this was something that he really hated doing. But he saved Earl. He saved him.
He saved Earl, but it freaked him out. Earl gets freaked out and he runs away scared. But he didn't just run away scared. He jumped from like what, the second story of their apartment building. He jumps down and he gets hurt, but he manages to get over to his car. I guess was it his cap? Yeah, it was his cap. Molly leaves work. She finds vampire dude. She finds dead Cronenberg. Everything's going down really quick here at the end. They drive out to some weird location. I can't remember where. I think it was probably where vampire dude was originally found. And then we see Earl dies from his injuries. He succumbs to his injury. And that's so sad. I put tan sad. Vampire dude is really sad because he yells out in sadness. Because this is what he didn't want to have to endure all this all over again. But luckily Molly shows up and she does some wild shit CPR. Like, she's like, how did he die? Did he die like this or like this? And like the fucking vampire dude's like, what does it fucking matter? He's dead. He didn't say that, but still, it's just like, so this is where
I watched you. Okay. I don't know how you knew what she was going to do. You can describe it. But I'm watching this and it's bizarre to me. I have no idea why she's asking these questions, how he died. I thought she was just going to do some CPR here. But Thalia shouts out exactly what Molly ends up doing, which is in, who would have thought of that? Who wrote it? We know who wrote it. But what I mean, like the imagining of this scene, Thalia guessed it.
Well, I guessed it because they were in cars. And the fact that she wanted to do CPR on him, and I thought, okay, they have cars, jumper cables. They got to use jumper cables. So she does the attaching to the metal and all that stuff to the car and everything. And she uses the jumper cables to get Earl's heart beating again. And he does. He's alive. He wakes up. He's alive. And it's nighttime at this point. This is all happening in nighttime because I guess it's taken this long for everything to go down because it started off in the daytime, but blah, 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 blah. And then vampire dude and Molly kind of just look over real quick over at the sun as the sun's starting to rise, and they're like, okay, all right, we got to get going. She's like, get in the trunk. They help move Earl into the car because he's still injured. Remember, I mean, he still has internal injuries. So they move him back into the car and Molly hops in. She's like, get in the trunk. And he's like, okay. So we see the back of the car and it looks like vampire dude gets in. But when they get to their destination, Molly opens the trunk and he's not there. And we see that, oh boy, vampire decided like, I can go now. And the reason he decided that was because while Earl was dying, Earl was just saying like, remember this or do that. I can't remember exactly what his words were, but basically they were not of fear. And vampire's like, You're not afraid of dying. He's like, no, I'm not afraid of dying. And then he died. So that was like a realization for vampire dude, because vampires can die and it's the sun can kill them. And he finally came to that conclusion. Like, I can end my life. I don't have to continue to live centuries upon centuries seeing my loved ones die. So it was sad when he decided to do that.
Torment.
Yeah. So I'm getting kind of teary-eyed just thinking about it because he decides to let him go.
Yeah, I love the way that you described this. She knew what they were going to do and everything. I think, Thalia, you're doing this movie a great justice by the way that you're describing it. Because it is definitely, I think, what they were going for. And I think you get it like a lot. This character and everything is definitely what it was going for. That's why I think it's more of like, is there a category for just like depression, horror, but like sad, depressing, pointless depression.
And it was, but okay. So that happens. It's really sad, but the ending after the credits, Alma, can you share? Because you actually told me stick around for the end credits because I didn't know that was going to be a thing here.
Yeah, I always go through the credits in the movies, and there was just a little scene at the very end where they have Rita in the donut shop, and she's talking, and the one of the bad guys comes back in, and he walks in real cool and confident, kind of like, casual and everything. And she was like, "I got shot in the head," and she's talking to the donut shop owner. She's like, "I survived a bullet to the head yesterday," or whatever. He goes, "Who shot you?" And she said, "Oh, I did that myself." But she's being very casual about it and just fine with the bandage because the bullet just grazed. She said, "It didn't really go into my head, it just grazed off." And then the guy next to her, the bad crime guy, comes in and he calls her a young lady. And I think that that was a real positive way to end it because she seems fine and she's almost being just like, "Yeah, that was great." She looked
Yeah.
like she was happy. And then
She
this
looked like
guy
she
made
was
her feel,
finally happy. Yeah.
yeah. And this guy walks in, called her a young lady, and smiles and gives her that flirtatious kind of wink. And yeah, and that was just it. It was just a little extra that they added to kind of, I think, just boost your little serotonin for a second there
Yeah,
after
because it
that.
had been so depressing. But now, even though we kind of didn't like her, we like the fact that she's at peace now and she's happy and some guy like mahalo for the ego boost here. So that was sweet. But I did want to read a little bit about Holly Dale. I wanted to share her bio because this was Women of Horror, and I want to talk about her because this was her first director. I already forgot how to pronounce it. Directorial debut. Is that right? Okay. So Holly Dale is one of Canada's premier directors, recognized globally for her outstanding award-winning television and cinema work crafted over the years. Ms. Dale has directed movies, entire miniseries, pilots, and episodic work. She has worked in all genres. Recently, Ms. Dale was tapped to be the producer director for showrunner Nick Santora's upcoming Netflix Skydance series, FUBAR, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, Monica Barbaro, and Fortune Feimster. The series will start streaming on Netflix in the summer of 2023. Ms. Dale was also producer director of international sensation Transplant. Among many prestigious awards Ms. Dale has earned is the Canadian Screen Award for Best Picture and Best Director for groundbreaking hard-edged serial killer miniseries Durham County. She was also honored with a Canadian Screen Award for Best Director for Mary Kills People. The Directors Guild of Canada has also recognized Ms. Dale as their Best Director of Drama Series on four separate occasions for her work on Flashpoint, Durham County, Mary Kills People, and the most recently, Transplant. Highlights of her extraordinary career go from Dexter, The Americans, X-Files, The Family, Chicago Fire, Chicago PD, Marvel's Agents of the Shield, Falling Skies. A lot of these shows are shows that I personally love and have enjoyed. Batwoman, The SEAL Team, Timeless. That was another one of my favorite ones right there. Rain. I'm just naming all these because that way you can see that this woman has done a lot since this movie. Law and Order, SVU. She's crazy talented, and it's kind of cool that this was her first time being a director in this movie. So that's what I have to say about that.
And yeah, that's awesome. I'm glad you found a great body of work to share. So I will start off with my personal thought on, I don't know, when I talk about rating movies sometimes, I think about movies and I'm like, oh, 5 stars, or I'll put like 2 thumbs up, or recommend, not recommend, or whatever. And I do not like to say I hate movies or anything. And I definitely, this movie is not a movie that I hated. It wasn't my taste. It wasn't my taste. It is not something that I would, it there was I liked the story. I really liked the story. I did not care for Earl the cab driver. I think he was mucking it up the whole time to me. I just thought I was just surprised that it was. I'm just like, I didn't understand the character portrayal there. It was too much Christopher Walken, not enough just act regular, and it was ruining the vibe for me the entire movie, because it was kind of just a sad story. It was a sad story about a vampire that I think was very interesting, that I think a lot of people would find very interesting. And I wish that he wasn't messing it up for me. That was honestly my
Okay,
opinion.
I get that. I get that. This being a movie that I never would have watched if we hadn't been doing this season, because we found it on Roku. I don't often like just click randomly on a movie on Roku, and I don't think this movie would randomly pop up on my Roku suggestions. So I like having watched this movie, because while it wasn't the best cinematic movie out there, I really liked the story. And you know me, if I like the story behind something, that's when I give it more chance. So even though on this podcast, we spoil the endings, we give all spoilers for everything, I still think you should check it out. It's not a long movie. It's like maybe 86 minutes. Yes, that dude doing his Christopher Walken kind of thing, that might ruin it for some people. Obviously, it did for Alma. But I think you should still check it out. Because I really like the story. Like I said, it's very endearing. The vampires and Molly and Earl, even with his weird accent that he's going for there. Who knows? I'm being rude over here. Maybe that's the way he really talks, and I'm being a bitch over here. He's just changed.
I didn't even think of that. Oh my God, that's so shitty. He doesn't. He wouldn't talk like that.
I don't know. Yeah. I'm just saying. It's a good story. And if any part of us talking about it got you interested, check it out. It's on Roku. So, yeah, those are my thoughts on it. And Alma, if people want to get a hold of us, how can people do that?
You can go to nightmaremoviepodcast.com. Our Instagram is at nightmaremoviepodcast. Our Twitter is at nightmareon5th. That's nightmareon5th. And then if you want to read some stuff, we are over on horrormovieblog.com and Instagram at horrormovieblog. And Dali has our Patreon and Buy Me a Coffee information.
Yeah, but don't forget to check out our horror movie blog, because we got South by Southwest stuff on there, including other festivals that are coming up. But our Patreon is patreon.com/nightmaremoviepodcast. If you are able to help us out monetarily over there, you can do a one-time donation over at our buymeacoffee.com/nightmaremoviepod. You can also leave a review. We have a link on our website. Just go up to reviews and you can add it on to Apple iTunes or Spotify. But at the end of the day, however you choose to support us, whether it's listening to us, sharing us, or doing one of our Patreon or Buy Me a Coffee, whatever it is, we are truly very grateful for all of that. So thank you very much. All right, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Nightmare on Fifth Street, a horror movie podcast. If you like what you heard, consider hitting that follow button and sharing us with others. We also love reviews, if that's your thing. And of course, you can always subscribe to our Patreon and on your favorite podcast platform like Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Whatever way you choose to support us, whether it's listening, sharing, or subscribing, we are truly grateful. Thank you so much.